It's the Vulture's Nest. You are on 2SER 107.3. I'm Sean Morahan. Thank you to Andrew Popel for another instalment of Final Draft. Each week here in the Vulture's Nest, we poke some of the week's news that isn't moving and see if it's just sleeping and hopefully check whether it's still alive. This week, Holden parent company General Motors announced that they are leaving Australia. The Prime Minister, who just a few months ago fled to Hawaii while the country was on fire, voiced his disgust that anyone else would choose to leave Australia when things got tough. The only difference I can see is that Holden didn't try to hide the fact that they were leaving. In case you're wondering, the Prime Minister's car is a BMW 7 Series. Before we commit to that story, though, we are going to set the mood with some music here in the Nest this morning. This is Hockey Dad, I Need a Woman, Farmer and the Owl. You're on 2SER 107.3, and this is The Vulture's Nest.
Lady, red eyes. Don't miss the best new queer cinema from around the world at Queer Screen's 27th Mardi Gras Film Festival. With over 130 films, there's something for everyone. The programme spans everything from The Glass Room, an epic love story of two women trapped by war, And Then We Danced, a powerful film about a young gay dancer defying the odds, to Bit, the transgender and lesbian vampire flick for lovers of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. These and more are showing from February 13 to 27. See the full program and grab tickets at queerscreen.org.au. To see our partners.
My mind has just been blown.
2SER.com.
You are on 2SER 107.3 and this is The Vulture's Nest on your Saturday morning. I'm Sean Morahan. Just before we went to the music there, I mentioned a story from the week's news that Holden parent company General Motors have announced this week that they are leaving Australia. Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, just a few months ago fled to Hawaii while the country was on fire, and he, at hearing the news of Holden's announcement, he's voiced his disgust this week that anyone else would choose to leave Australia when things got tough. I mentioned the only difference I can see is that Holden didn't try to hide the fact that they were leaving. Also, the Prime Minister's car, in case you're interested, is a BMW 7 Series, not that that has any relevance to the story. So Holden are owned by General Motors, and they've had a rivalry with Ford for longer than my lifetime. And I do recall how, when I was at school, a lot of the time the conversations were around whether you're a Ford supporter or a Holden supporter. There have been a lot of rivalries, both in motorsport between those two companies, as well as in sales. And I think Holden have won this one. They've beaten Ford in getting out of Australia. Long-time listeners to The Vulture's Nest may be aware that most of my working life has been spent working in the motor industry. So being in the nest by myself this morning, I thought I might share a few of my perceptions and stories with you about the motor industry and perhaps some of the background that might help some people understand a little bit about the turmoil that's going on in the motor industry at the moment. It's interesting how different manufacturers market their cars or don't market their cars, as the case may be. And this week, a lot of people have asked me because they know of my connections in the motor industry and the fact that I still do some part-time consulting to elements of the motor industry. You know, what's going on? What happened with Holden? What's going to happen with Ford? And some of these things I don't have answers to. I've got my own opinions, experiences and observations. So, but I had so many people ask me this week, a lot of it is still fresh in my head. And some of them asked me about Holden and what I saw as some of the contributing factors to Holden leaving. And the main reason, I think, was marketing. Not marketing as in advertising, but marketing more as in understanding what a customer needs and then being able to provide it for them, working out what problems they have that they need solutions to, and then working out how your product or your services can actually genuinely help them solve those problems. One of the key things in marketing too is something called positioning, where you identify what position you'd like to own in the customer's mind, if the customer is mindful of your market at all. So I think Holden for a long time traded on the fact that the position they owned was Australian, even though they were owned by General Motors. I remember even somebody at school when I was in primary school getting very, very angry in discussions about Australian car companies, and it didn't matter that the car was perhaps manufactured by a car company from overseas. Even if it was manufactured in Australia, it was more the fact that the company name had Australia in it that made it an Australian car company, which even at the time, as I think an 11-year-old, I found quite bewildering. But I even thought, wow, somebody's, I didn't know what marketing was back then, but I thought somebody's done some pretty good marketing to have an 11-year-old so passionately convinced that that's what an Australian car is, one whose car company has the word Australia in its name. The one word that Holden, I think, for a lot of people represented in the car industry was Australian. We had that song with football, meat pies, kangaroos and Holden cars. They were in the 80s, they were big sponsors, I remember, of the AFL, so a lot of Australian football was emblazoned with Holden. I think as well we had a Holden Cup in the NRL. I might have remembered that incorrectly, but it does seem to ring a bell. So they traded on that when economic pressures, among other things, meant that they had to start sourcing their cars from overseas. All of a sudden, their identity as Australian became less and less credible. The fact that even the cars themselves weren't manufactured in Australia anymore meant that if they wanted to keep trading on the Australian name, it seemed a little bit sort of disingenuous. And a lot of companies get faced with that transition in their lifetime, particularly companies who've lasted as long as General Motors and Holden. And one of the ways to address that is to reinvent yourself or find something aligned to that particular word. So maybe there was another word other than Australian that they could have owned and moved across, you know, fairly easily to own that position in people's minds without necessarily making a massive change. There are some companies, for example, that are around for prestige or safety. And so that's, you know, often the word that is owned in a customer's mind or a prospective customer's mind when people are looking at that brand. And then, you know, from an example for a company that perhaps is renowned for safety might look at other ways of certainty. If safety is not the flavour of the month at the moment, if people aren't necessarily prioritising safety as a reason to buy something, just certainty in general, perhaps certainty in terms of resale value, certainty in terms of availability, certainty in terms of information, certainty in terms of build quality, the integrity of the vehicle, other things like that. So a lot of those things are aligned or parallel to safety and are fairly easy connections for a customer to make from safety to those things. Perhaps not just the safety of the vehicle, but the safety of the ownership experience. So that's how you might, for example, remarket yourself if you were positioned as safety and all of a sudden things shifted and safety wasn't the flavour of the month. So to my mind, I don't think Holden ever did that. I think they were still trading on the fact that they were Australian, even though they didn't necessarily own that word in the customer's mind anymore. There are some very unusual things I've seen in the motor industry, though, about the way that car companies try to go about doing things. Well, sometimes they just do them perhaps without any necessary reason that we could understand. I do remember one company that I worked for. There was a model that got launched, and it got launched in the middle of a whole lot of bad publicity. It had had some very negative press in Europe, and what the company did was they recalled the car across Europe and basically fixed the problem that it was criticised for. Some would say it was unfairly criticised for, but they, you know, did a massive recall campaign, fixed the cars. That was all taken care of before the car ever came to Australia. Yet, when it came to Australia, a lot of people still had massive doubts because they'd heard the negative publicity. They hadn't heard the positive publicity after the problem had been completely fixed. And so it made selling that car a little bit difficult in Australia. I think through very good management in New South Wales, the car sold and sold well, and the people who bought the cars loved the cars, didn't have a problem with them. And yet sales were still very, very challenging in all the other states of Australia. The national head office was in a state other than New South Wales, and they were a bit bewildered by it all. And, of course, the majority of the information they got was that these cars are impossible to sell, because that was what was the information that was coming back from all of the states except New South Wales. So as a great marketing idea, they decided the way to sell these cars was to give people a one-week test drive. And I'm trying to hold myself back from laughing as I tell you this. They said, yeah, look, the car's so good. Once people drive it, they'll understand how good it is and that'll make them buy it. So without putting any criteria on that, they basically just advertised a national campaign where you could go into a dealership and borrow a new car for a week and then return it, no questions asked. And of course, that's what happened. People borrowed the car for a week and returned it, no questions asked, and didn't buy it. So all of a sudden, that manufacturer had a fleet of all of these cars that were now used cars that had a whole lot of kilometres on them that weren't sold. And in fact, sales nationally declined during the period of that promotion. Some other things that happened, we had people picking up the car from a dealership in Sydney and then returning it to a dealership in Brisbane a week later. So well done to them. Very clever way to get a free car for the week for your trip to Brisbane. We had other people dropping the car back at midnight and sliding the keys under the door so they wouldn't have to talk to anybody. So a lot of people, it just attracted a whole lot of people who weren't particularly interested in the car or even in buying a car. It's just that this manufacturer is offering a free car for a week. No strings attached. Why don't I take advantage of that? Even when I was buying a car with my partner just in recent years, Ford were advertising something that I'd seen fail at other manufacturers several times, and yet every now and then another manufacturer rolls it out. And that was a promotion whereby if you came in and drove their car and bought a different car, they would pay you $500. And it just seems ridiculous. I mean, it shows extraordinary confidence in their brand and their product that it's going to attract people who've already decided to buy something else, decide, okay, well, we'll take $500 of Ford's money. We'll go and drive their Ford. We will provide the necessary paperwork to show them that we've bought something other than the Ford, and we'll claim our $500. For that reason alone, we went and had a look at a Ford, and we test drove the Ford to claim our $500. And while we were there, Ford went to the dealership that we went to extraordinary efforts to try and get us to buy a one-year-old model of the same car that we were looking at. So it was in November that we went there, and the Ford dealer were aggressively pushing us to buy the previous year's model, which they still had plenty of in stock. They were offering us nearly $7,000 extra discount to buy the year-old new car. If nothing else, it reinforced our decision not to buy a Ford at all, because we then had significant evidence that other people weren't buying these cars. If they've got stock that's over a year old, it's just proof that there are thousands of people deciding not to buy these cars, and haven't been buying them for at least a year. I also reasoned that if they were giving nearly $8,000 off, $7,000 off that car, that was on top of what they're offering us off the new car, the one that was actually built recently, that was going to absolutely destroy resale values on those cars as well. So you were basically buying a financial problem from Ford. They'd basically trying to offload a financial problem to you. I'm not suggesting that that's happening currently for Ford. I don't think it's a good thing, you know, for a lot of people if they're losing their jobs. And Ford, I know, are looking to try and re-employ some of the people who are losing their jobs from Holden. There are some skills and experience and a whole lot of business contacts that those people have that will be very valuably employed in the motor industry, or even in aligned industries that provide customer service and parts and servicing for the car industry. So, you know, we wish those people from Holden who are looking for transitions in their career, you know, the best of luck and every opportunity that they can get. But there are just some very unusual things that happen in the car industry that really defy belief sometimes. While I was working at another car company, the marketing department conducted an unusual survey. If you've just tuned in, this is The Vulture's Nest on 2SER on your Saturday morning, and I'm Sean Morahan. I'm reviewing this week the news that Holden have decided to pull out of Australia. They made a public announcement during the week, and it's generated a lot of public debate. And I'm just sharing some of my experience in the motor industry about how cars get marketed or mismarketed. While I was working for one prestige car company, a senior guy from the marketing department came around the office one day and showed us two ads and asked us which of the two ads we preferred, us being the staff. So he basically went around the office asking all the other staff, which ad do we think was better? And I answered him, the one that sells cars. And he replied, ha ha, very funny. I said, I'm serious. Why are you asking me if you don't want my answer? He said, well, the CEO couldn't make up a decision as to which ad to run, so he asked the marketing guy to survey everybody in the office that day and go with what the majority voted for. And I was just incredulous. And I looked and pointed around the office and said, all of us, and there were about 30 people in the office that day. And he said, yes. And I said, none of whom are in the market for a new car. And he said, yes. And I said, none of whom are in the target market for this particular car. And he said, yes. And I just shook my head and said, well, my answer stands. He said, so I'll put you down for neither. And I don't think either of them were particularly effective ads, but at a minimum, I suggested that we test them on a small group of people who are in the target market for those cars. Now, if you don't work in the motor industry, that probably sounds like bleeding common sense to you, but my experience with a lot of manufacturers that I worked for was that the common sense was not common at all. So they went with the office vote, they spent the money, and they continued to complain about how few people were buying their cars. That particular manufacturer too, I think one of the situations a lot of manufacturers have is they've got a lot of cars at grass. Now what that means is it's a nice metaphor for having cars parked in a field that haven't sold. More and more recently, it means that they've got registered cars in that situation. So not even cars that are unsold. because of the competitive nature of the industry and sometimes ridiculously competitive nature of the industry, as we've seen with Ford and Holden, but I know a couple of other manufacturers who have rivalries with each other, they will try and beat the other manufacturer on numbers. So what they do is they have a reporting system. The number of registrations each month get reported. Now, there are some legitimate registrations that the company makes to itself. It registers cars in its own name for press fleets. It registers cars in its own name for company cars, evaluation cars, sponsorship cars. So if they're sponsoring an event, they might, a big sporting event, they might be providing cars for the sports champions to be chauffeured in their cars. It's a little bit of extra publicity for their cars, and those cars hopefully then get sold as used cars in the not-too-distant future. But what I've seen happen with a lot of companies that I've dealt with is they accumulate those cars, they can't sell those cars. And especially when new cars are being discounted so heavily, often even sold at cost, comparatively it's very difficult to sell a car that's near new, that's got a couple of thousand kilometres on the clock, because you've got no more money to then invest to subsidise the price of that car to make it significantly attractive, to make it even more affordable than the new car you're already selling at cost. So you're losing profit opportunity. You've sacrificed all the profit to sell the new car. So the car that you have that's near new but been used for some promotional work or a company car, you then don't have the money that is required to entice people to make that car an attractive choice as an alternative to the new car that they're getting for next to nothing. And so a lot of manufacturers are accumulating these cars. It's a problem they feel they don't have to necessarily deal with today. So those cars go into fields or sheds or storage yards, and they just accumulate and accumulate. Anecdotally, I have heard of manufacturers in our industry who've got literally hundreds and hundreds, perhaps some even have got thousands of these cars registered and stored, and just hoping that it's a problem that the next person who comes along will clear for them. So I think for some of the industry, that may be a ticking time bomb, that, Holden pulling up stumps, they may not be the only one to do that in the near future. You are on 2SER 107.3. And this is The Vulture's Nest. This morning I'm talking about Holden's decision to leave Australia and some of the ramifications of that in the car industry. Before we go any further into that story, let's take another track. This is Poison. Dark Fair is the band, and you're on 2SER 107.3.
I'll break you up in my
This is 2SER 107.3. That was Dark Fair with Poison. You are with Sean Morahan in the Vulture's Nest. This morning, I've been reflecting on some of my experiences of 30 years working in the motor industry on the back of the news that Holden this week have decided that they are leaving Australia, leaving the Australian market. Some of the things I've shared with you this morning were some of my experiences of some bewildering behaviour in the motor industry, particularly by senior management. But I think to balance that, I should acknowledge there are some fantastic people working in the industry who have extremely high ethics, extremely high regard for customer service, and are dedicated, and a lot of them have dedicated their lives to providing great service and doing their absolute best to improve the industry and the experience for customers. So a shout out to those people. Just as there are in any industry, there are a lot of people doing the right thing and consistently trying to do the right thing, and others who perhaps make it a little bit harder for the rest of them. Another recent thing that happened to me relating to the motor industry, a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, asked me why I didn't do more training in the industry. She said she just bought a car and had a horrible experience. And I asked her what she did, and she said, well, I bought the car. And I said, from the person who gave you a horrible experience? And she said, yes. And I said, well, perhaps that's where the problem is, that if you patronise somebody who doesn't give you a good experience, you are basically ensuring they stay in the industry. They get the kudos for making the sale. They get the little bit of commission. They get to keep their job. So if you are looking to improve any service industry, I'd say just patronise where you get good service and let other people know about it. You have been in the Vulture's Nest today with me, Sean Morahan, talking a little bit about the car industry in Australia. Coming up on 2SER with the best in arts, theatre, music, pop culture and all things creative, it's Nicole with So Hot Right Now. That's coming up here at just a minute at 11 o'clock. And to keep your eardrums primed, we're going to take a little bit of Richard In Your Mind by Hammond. This is 2SER 107.3.